You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to No One's Legal Radio. We're part of No Borders Media and the CKUT Communities Collective's Off the Hour at 90.3 FM in Montreal. www.ckut.ca on the web. On today's show, we feature an interview with two main organizers of the upcoming Trans March in Montreal. The march will take place this Saturday, August 5th, starting at 2:30 p.m. at Place du Canada near the Bonaventure Metro. The starting point is where the John A. McDonald statue used to be until it was courageously torn down by anti-colonial protesters. Along with the march, there will be a community dinner. This year's Trans March, an annual event in Montreal since at least 2014, takes on a special resonance because of the massive escalation of hatred aimed at the trans community by the far right, but also mainstream conservatives. The trans community and allied communities have been subject to a vicious international campaign of misinformation. For context on the struggle for trans justice, we speak with Celeste and Fern, organizers of the Trans March in Montreal. I'm on the line with Celeste and Fern. Celeste and Fern are the main organizers of this year's Trans March in Montreal. They'll be giving us context and details about that march, but also broader context of organizing for trans justice and trans rights and related issues in Montreal and beyond. Celeste and Fern, welcome to No Borders Media.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for the invitation.
It's great to have you. It's such an important march this year, I feel. I mean, I think it's always important, but there just seems to be a particular feeling about this year because of how much trans communities have been under attack. So maybe as main organizers, can each of you share a bit about how you're feeling about this year's march, the importance of it? It's only a couple of days away, so I can imagine as organizers, there's a bit of pressure and a lot of tasks and things to do. But give our listeners a sense of some of your feelings as the march is a few days away and the importance of the march this year.
I'll say absolutely. People are feeling very much stressed out, but also excited for the march because it's such an important occasion this year. With everything that's been going on, with the fact that we've had to do our first two drag defenses this year in Quebec, how we've had to fight, how trans people have been physically attacked on various occasions across the city, it is no surprise that this year it's becoming more important than ever before to address rising anti-trans hate and just this context of government inaction, institutional inaction, and spreading hatred everywhere that is currently plaguing all of us. It's a depressing year for trans rights, I'll be very honest. But I do believe that people are activated and they are excited to continue fighting for the cause because of how important it is now more than ever before.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'd say right now people are tired, but people are also energized and coming together a lot. I've seen over the last year a lot of grassroots projects springing up and people really supporting each other in various informal ways, especially. This Trans March is going to be a really great opportunity for people to connect with each other and also to have a very visual and clear presence of how many of us there are and how much we and how many people support us and showing up to support each other. And we've also done things a bit differently this year than in previous years. Last year, Celeste was amazing and did the bulk of the organization on her own. In less than 10 days. And it was, I think, the biggest one we've had in Quebec ever.
Yeah.
With about 1,000 people. This year we're expecting even more people, and we have taken measures in terms of de-escalation training and things like that so that people can not just show up and be seen, but also feel relatively safe that we have community measures to help manage any conflicts or more difficult situations that arise.
Yeah, we've also tripled down on accessibility to make this the most accessible trans march that has ever happened, to the point where even just the number of accessibility bullet points goes past like several screens.
Yeah, I saw that online. It was pretty impressive to take that into account and everything that was trying to be accommodated or taken into account. This is an annual march. So can you give us a sense, one of you, Fern or Celeste, of some of the history of the march? You know, people often associate these marches with Pride, but there's a specific trans march that takes place under that name and under that umbrella. So give a sense of the history of that here in Montreal and how long it's been going on and why a specific trans march. It might seem obvious, but people need to be reminded of that, I think.
Yeah, so the first Montreal Trans March was back in 2014, at least within its modern history. Unfortunately, a lot of past history has been erased or otherwise left untold. So we can start from there, where there was a small trans march that was organized specifically to ask for access to gender-affirming IDs without bottom surgery, which was still imposed at the time. And every year since then, different demands have been pushed forth to push for more rights for the trans community. For example, for many years, we fought for trans migrants. Other years, we fought for trans parents and their families. And in 2019, we fought for trans healthcare. There was a gap in 2020 because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And before then, between 2014 and 2019, all of these marches were organized by a collective that would later be known as Euphorie dans le genre. So this march very much has a rich history as probably the trans community's magnum opus community event in Montreal. In 2021, the reins were picked up by Aztec, a local community organization, which organized protests that year. And the subsequent year, it was organized pretty much entirely by me. And now we're in 2023, where it's being organized in a much more collective manner by an amazing team of about 75 volunteer organizers, including us two, which has enabled us to do way more than what we could have done in previous years.
Yeah. Awesome. If I can also add about when you're asking about why this march, why a trans march, and sort of what is it, how is it different from Pride? It's trans march is very much a political action with political demands. I know this year Fierté has talked about some of their demands, which is great, but largely I think Pride is often treated as more of a celebration of our communities, whereas this is more of a, it can be a celebration, but it's also an expression of rage and of the things that we need changed.
And is there a transnational, international dimension to this as well? Are there trans marches across North America, across the world? Is Montreal an innovator in this? Give us a sense of other marches that do take place in North America, I guess, on this issue.
I can give a few examples, such as the Ottawa Trans March, the Vancouver Trans March. There's also lots of more nationwide protests also happening in the United States. For example, there's one planned in Florida in September, if I'm correct. We also recently had the London Trans March, which had about, I believe, between 25,000 and 50,000 people present. So it was a massive march in a country that otherwise is known for being extremely transphobic and trans-hostile. So this is a worldwide phenomenon. Also, for the Quebec context, we very much adapt our demands and what we do to local legislation and what is happening here, especially. I know it's easy to think that what's happening in the United States and the UK, Uganda, and elsewhere is limited to those countries, but I want folks to know that this is also happening here, which is why all the demands are being oriented towards here, towards Quebec, and to a lesser degree, towards the entirety of Canada as well.
And there are some that are even very much Montreal-specific and tie into histories within Montreal.
So a lot of our listeners will be listening in after the march has happened, but we're recording this interview just 2 days beforehand. And so could you give our listeners details? The march is on Saturday, August 5th, but give our details about where it is, what's happening, everything that people need to know so they can participate and tell their friends to participate as well.
Yes, of course. So like you said, the march is happening this Saturday, August 5th. The meeting time is 2:30 at Place du Canada or Dorchester Square, which is not far from the Bonaventure Metro. There will be snacks and water at that time, and then there will be speeches starting a little bit before 3, and then we will start marching around 3:05 is the plan. The march goes down along St. Catherine Street. It's about 2.5 kilometers long, but we'll be taking it nice and slow, and there'll be 2 stops, one near the RAMQ offices, where there'll be another speech, and then one at the or near Café Cléopâtre, where we'll have a moment of silence. The march is going to end at the Place Émile Gamelin, which is right by the Berry-UQAM Metro. And there's a big space that can accommodate up to 2,000 people. There will be a community dinner with food that will be, you know, vegan and gluten-free and nut-free all in the same meals. As well as a few meat options as well. And then there'll be an open mic type of style for speeches relating to the march and to celebrate our trans lives. When we arrive at the Place Émile Gamelin, and after that, Fierté has organized a trans DJ set. There'll be 3 trans artists doing sort of a DJ set to make it into kind of a picnic party.
Awesome.
And that will be until 8 p.m.
Awesome. So again, that's the Saturday, August 5th, and it starts at, was it 2 p.m.?
2:30.
2:30 p.m. at Place du Canada. That's where the headless former Johnny McDonald, or the actually, it's not even headless anymore. That's where the Johnny McDonald statue used to be, and it's not there anymore. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that trans rights, one of the reasons why we need to fight for it is because transphobia and the elimination of gender diversity at large is caused by colonialism, which Johnny McDonald actively participated in. So very symbolic location as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, we've gotten into those details, but maybe now is a good time to talk about the broader demands you've articulated as the Trans March, several demands, and maybe this is an opportunity to talk about some of them, what stands out for you, what's important to highlight this year for this year's Trans March. So many of the issues, so many trans issues end up being filtered through the mainstream media and unfortunately through the far right, and that ends up focusing on certain things, which isn't necessarily the focus of the community at all. So do talk about what is preoccupying people during this march and what are people demanding?
Absolutely. So just to summarize in one sentence our demands, let us live and allow us to thrive, which is the guiding principle behind all of our demands. We want to make sure that trans community members are able to live their best lives, regardless of their socioeconomic status, regardless of their gender identity, regardless of basically everything. So as our first demand talks about accessing gender-affirming healthcare throughout Quebec, which unfortunately still remains a two-tiered system for certain people, or that be trans migrants or other people. So as such examples, currently refugee claimants and many other people who don't have access to RAMQ have a very difficult time accessing gender-affirming healthcare in Quebec. And we seek to make that change. But even for Quebec residents with RAMQ, it still remains difficult to obtain certain forms of healthcare, such as injectable estrogens, other forms of hormone replacement therapy and hormone blockers, which are uninsured, which makes them cost a fortune. Various gender-affirming surgeries, including essential ones, such as facial feminization surgery, being not insured by RAMQ, which also puts a significant 5-figure financial burden on trans people who require it, and just other forms of gender-affirming healthcare, which is not typically considered as healthcare, such as electrolysis, facial hair, other forms of facial hair removal, voice training, etc., which are all essential to trans people's well-being. We want to make sure that all of that is covered by public health insurance and to make sure that every trans person in Quebec has access to those. Apart from that, we're also demanding regarding ex-gender markers in Quebec that action be taken so that trans people who want an ex-gender marker on their IDs can get it. Because currently, the only provincial ID in Quebec that accepts the ex-gender marker is a firearms license. And that is, if you're asking me, not cool. So we're asking especially for the RAMQ and the SAC, so the Société d'Assurance Automobile du Québec, to implement the ex-gender marker on their IDs. And if they cannot do it immediately, to at least have an immediate temporary solution put up so that trans people no longer have to constantly justify their identities or just be dehumanized in various settings where ID has to be presented. And on top of that, we also want to make legal gender marker changes more accessible to trans migrants who are, whether refugees, refugee claimants, or just undocumented people, or just people who have bad terms with their parents and who are unable to get birth certificates. Right now, these people have to go to the court to get their name changes done, which is ridiculous, which costs probably at least four figures, which requires a lawyer and is simply an extremely heavy process that is not made for trans people. So we want to get that changed and have an easy, streamlined process for them also to access gender marker changes, because it should not just be because you were born in the quote-unquote wrong end quote country that you don't have access to ID for the rest of your life.
If I may add some context to that, this is specifically an issue. It's an issue for a lot of people, but it's specifically an issue because in order to change legal names and gender markers, they ask for an original birth certificate, which of course people can't necessarily access, especially if they are here because they are in search of asylum, whether they have status as refugees or not, because going back to their country of origin immediately invalidates their any refugee claim that they would be positing.
Yeah.
So it makes it impossible to get those things. So that's why we're asking for the creation of new semi-authentic birth certificates from the Quebec government so that the people who don't have access to original legal documents can still change their names.
Yeah, for info, semi-authentic, it's just like some crazy Quebec legalese where they basically create a birth certificate for you regardless of where you were born. So it's sort of like that the Quebec name change system works. I won't go too deeply into the name change regime here, but for short, you need your birth certificate to change your name if you were born outside of Quebec, or trying to remedy it. And of course, there's the major point, anti-trans hate. We're demanding, of course, that officials denounce rising anti-trans hate and that they act for queer safety. But at the same time, denouncing does nothing. Just look at how Justin Trudeau denounced the triple stabbing at Waterloo University, and nothing has happened since. Queer people are not feeling safer. So we're demanding legislative and executive action from them in every possible way, whether that be more funding to community organizations or defunding anti-trans groups, which are still being funded in Quebec as of this day and in many other Canadian provinces as well. Also like to demand just on this end that more legislative protections be given to trans people so they won't have to bear the brunt of, you know, having their very identity challenged when you walk down the street.
Yeah, and so on that note about funding different organizations or not, what we're seeing in recent years, we've had a number of trans organizations that have either lost their funding, had their funding diminished and things like that. So we're asking for continual and increased investment in trans community organizations that support us and also the ones that offer relevant training to non-trans groups. So this could include specifically funding organizations that provide adequate and knowledgeable legal support and representation for trans migrants and trans sex workers who often get misrepresented by lawyers who don't necessarily know or understand the details or intricacies of what being trans entails, both on a personal level as well as on a legal and immigration level. So it also include training for workers in public institutions and public and institutions that provide support or that are meant to provide support. So those include, for example, shelters. What we've seen is that sometimes people who are not, either people who are trans and who have not been on HRT for, quote, long enough, or who are not immediately perceived as the gender that they are turned away from shelters, for example, which means that they end up being without a place to stay, without a place to stay or be safe. And this particularly impacts trans feminine, migrant and racialized people in these situations because of the way they are gendered and perceived as sometimes dangerous.
Exactly.
And we know these aren't true things about these people, but that is the way that they are sometimes treated by the different institutions and systems.
I just like to add to that, the whole youth homelessness crisis that we're seeing around Montreal and elsewhere, it's a lot of it is caused by parents kicking out trans and queer children or teenagers. So we also want to make sure that youth shelters can also make sure that these teens, kids, can at least have one environment where they can feel safe, because currently many of them still remain unsafe locations where they end up running away again because there's just too much transphobia. So it still is a very prevalent issue, and we're hoping that with extra funding we can work with community organizations on resolving that.
Yeah, thank you. And so this would also include funding as well for the training of health professionals and social service providers about trans realities and experiences, so that people can access these services with safety and with dignity. And then we were also, as part of the demands, asking for the decriminalization of sex work and the removal of the federal prohibition against sex work for refugees. So this has to, and this is for here, I'm going to quote from the Canadian Alliance for Sex Work Law Reform. In their 2017 report, they specifically talk about how the over-application of human trafficking laws across Canada results in the profiling, detention, and deportation of migrant sex workers. So this means treating sex work as a form of labor, rather than as treating it as necessarily trafficking or something that is otherwise criminalized, and also not deporting migrants who are also sex workers back to places where they would not be safe or be even less safe than here. And so with regards to that, or in relation to that, we would also call on the federal government for the inclusion of sex workers who have been criminalized in upcoming federal regularization programs. So the Trudeau government has announced this creation of federal regularization programs, but has not given specifics yet about who will be included or not, with the exception of some groups who he said already will be. So we want to make sure that people who have been criminalized for this kind of labor are included and are able to remain in Canada if they so choose. And then the last point relates to what I was talking about earlier with regards to how some of the demands are Montreal specific, and that's the creation of subsidized housing for people who have been displaced from their traditional neighborhoods, particularly trans people from downtown Montreal, including the Village and along Ontario Street. And that comes from a displacement effort from 1995 to 2010 to move these people away from the Village. And this has included especially targeting people who use drugs and people who engage in sex work. And there have been multiple different policies used, both very directly and more indirectly to move these people and displace these people out of the village, but often leaving them with nowhere to go. So as a form of reparation against this, having creation of the subsidized housing would be one step forward.
So Celeste and Fern, that's a pretty thorough, detailed set of demands that address policy, that address frontline struggles, that address legal dimensions, that address what people are living day to day. So thank you for laying that all out. I'm sure a lot of listeners, including myself as an interviewer, would like to check those out in more detail. So is there a website or somewhere where people can go and get a sense of those demands and read them for themselves?
Yeah, so there's, of course, there's a Facebook event for the protest proper. I also have a little summary posted on my personal Instagram page at Celeste Shannon and Ursula Longchamp's Instagram page at earthly.dom.le.doc. It's also on a website just simply called Marchetrans, MARCHETRANS.gay, where the demands and everything else has been compiled into a website for easy consultation in English, French, and Espanol.
Cool. Before moving on to sort of a broader context of a lot of what's been happening in society, before leaving the march itself, I want to ask a very simple question, and that is, because a lot of people will wonder about this, is that should folks who are non-trans, should cis folks attend? My feeling about that is, of course, but I want to get that from both of you about the broader movement and the broader struggle and who's part of that struggle.
I'll say one thing, absolutely, because so much of trans rights is, the reason why trans rights is so important is because it's so interconnected to various other human rights struggles that we have. Some U.S. anti-trans bills specifically pair together abortion bans and gender-affirming care bans because for U.S. Republicans, it's one and the same thing, c'est-à-dire having people be able to control their own bodies, which they hate. So trans rights is women's rights, is migrant rights, sex workers' rights, just broader queer rights in general, and just overall human rights and civil liberties that we're fighting for. So of course, trans rights is a major angle for us, but regardless, everyone is welcome. If you're a straight cis man who's pretty tall, and who just wants to like march in solidarity with us, come on along. You're more than welcome to. We also have water and snacks for you.
Yeah, just echoing what Celeste said, absolutely. Please come out, please. There are events that are closed that are only for folks who are non-cis, but this is not one of them. This is a kind of thing where we're really inviting everyone who is supportive to come to this march. And to the community dinner afterwards, make connections, meet people.
Yeah. So I want to remind our listeners that everyone who supports these issues and supports broader issues are welcome. Again, it's this Saturday, for people who are listening before this march happens, it's Saturday, August 5th, 2:30 p.m. Meet at Place du Canada, which is near the Bonaventure Metro. Now, for the last 10 minutes or so that we have left in this interview, I want to talk about, the broader issues. I mean, it's not an understatement that not just the far right, but even just the regular right wing have completely demonized trans communities. The hatred is palpable. Unfortunately, it's not recognized as such. It's almost as if it's an acceptable form of hatred, in terms of how people react to it. For me, and I'm sure for a lot of listeners, this is obvious, but maybe one of you can give us a sense of what trans communities are facing right now, both in terms of what they're seeing in the media, but also in terms of actual policy and actual organizing and actual hatred leading often to injury and death that people might experience. It's a difficult topic. So I warn our listeners about that, of course, but, I think it's important to talk about that broader context.
Yeah, so I'll just say it starts with violent op-eds accusing trans women of being men or monsters, but usually the latter, accusing trans people of having like some sort of agenda to convert kids or otherwise just nonsensical propositions like these. Fun fact, the term gender ideology was coined by the Catholic Church in 1994, specifically to oppose first women's rights and now trans rights. So this is an organized movement that has been actively working to demonize the trans community by putting us against one another, by saying that if we exist, Western civilization will collapse. The truth is, it's such a fearful situation right now because, in a way, for right-wing conservatives who might have lived in a world filled with gender roles and with all of this, their vision of Western civilization will collapse if trans people are allowed to thrive, which is why it's why they're so scared. It's because we are free compared to them. And because of this, you have consequences everywhere. You have over 500 anti-trans bills, which have been introduced in the United States this year. So far, most red states in the states have already banned gender-affirming care for minors and some for adults as well. Many have, there's been a displacement of at least 250,000 trans people internally within the United States, from red states to blue ones such as California and New York. So this is there is already a refugee crisis, a political refugee crisis happening in the United States. It could easily be millions of people who have to move. And if this happens federally in the States, that's where they all come. Canada, we'll have a million refugee. We might have a million refugee claimants who are trans people in the next few years. Owing to this, it's a humanitarian crisis, if you're asking me. But even at a more local level, we see the consequences. Many trans people no longer feel safe. They comment that they just don't feel safe walking down the street, especially openly as gender nonconforming. And many have been physically attacked for being trans, especially non-passing trans women.
And this applies both to other civilians who are doing this, as well as increased policing and police violence directed towards trans people. Insistence on dead names, even after the legal names have been changed and legal ID shows this, and just general over-policing, specifically targeting trans people, especially trans women of color, who are more visible in various capacities, even if they're just, you know, not doing anything in particular, but they're more often singled out.
Absolutely, and you also start seeing policy consequences here in Canada as well. For example, what has been happening with New Brunswick Policy 713, which was introduced very recently to the modifications to said policy to make trans kids' lives harder. It's a sign of what's to come because many right-wing Canadian groups, such as Action for Canada, as well as anti-trans organizers and groups such as the LGBT Alliance, are calling on other Canadian provinces to introduce such same bans to make sure trans kids cannot actually live their best life without their parents' consent, which is, if you're asking me, ridiculous and unconstitutional. What's worse is you have physical attacks against people. I mentioned the triple stabbing too. It's only a matter of time before we have our own Club Q attack. It's a matter of time before we have a polytechnic directed to trans people if we still allow anti-trans hate to spread. There's a reason why it's called stochastic terrorism. It's because it creates such climate of fear where every time anti-trans messaging is being spread in the media, online, by politicians, by people in positions of power, both here in Montreal, nationally and internationally, the chance of there being a terrorist attack slowly inches up towards one.
I would also like to note that some things are really obvious as transphobia, but there's a lot of ways in which this messaging is insidious and creeps in small ways, in ways that are subtle at first and then gradually build to full-fledged hatred.
And I think it's really important to be very aware of the media we're consuming. I notice this because I do a lot of education work, and I notice people who are seeing things on TikTok and taking everything they see as face value, and noting, of course, that some of the things that are pushed towards individuals are the ones that are the most inflammatory, so are often the ones that are the most either salacious or get the biggest reactions because of their implications around violence being caused by trans people, even though in the vast majority of cases this is untrue or exaggerated. So I think it's important to note that it creeps in at all levels, and it starts really, really subtly.
It starts with defending parents' rights. It starts with simple dog whistles like this, like defending parental rights, protecting children, etc. And it ends up at quote-unquote eradicating transgenderism, c'est-à-dire genocide. It's a pipeline. It gets worse and worse until you reach the point of no return.
Thanks for providing that difficult context. For our listeners, there's been a few references to a stabbing attack, and not everybody might know about it, especially from the United States, but there was a gender studies class at the University of Waterloo where an assailant came in and stabbed the professor and two students, and it was very clearly a hate attack. And obviously the context you talk about, this is the kind of thing that people end up getting motivated to do. Similar to how, you know, Jewish community gets attacked at the Tree of Life Synagogue, and other minority communities get attacked when people attack those communities.
Absolutely. We had a mosque had its windows shattered just this last weekend, if I'm correct.
Yeah, exactly. And, but what I wanted to also ask is, obviously there's been systemic long-term attacks on trans communities and other oppressed communities for decades and decades and decades, but there seems to be something that has happened in the last 2 to 3 years, a very specific attempt by certain political actors on the far right and the mainstream right to specifically attack trans communities to mobilize their base. So am I right about that, that there seems to be something that has happened in the last 2 to 3 years, or do I maybe lacking perspective on what's been happening?
Seems like that. It definitely seems like that. And I will say there's a lot that's been difficult in the last 2 to 3 years. And I think politicians are looking for a scapegoat, and they're looking for perceived action. That being said, a lot of the time that perception doesn't necessarily work in their favor. There have been several cases of in the States of folks on the right losing elections because they got so into trans people, and especially trans children's business, that it made the more centrists who may have been more on the fence about who to vote for uncomfortable and voting more blue, which I think is a little bit ironic and shows that there is still hope in the general hope for us from the general population of understanding that, you know, trans people and our people, trans children are just kids trying to live their lives and figuring out what is right for them as we all try and figure out what's right for all of us. But it is visible. It is noticeable. The way I think algorithms have shifted the way conversations are being had and pushing some of this transphobia.
Yeah, inflammatory rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And I'd say in Canada more specifically, I'd say the last 12, 18 months have really been a flashpoint. I'd say it definitely started in the United States. It definitely started elsewhere abroad. I'd say maybe started in 2019, 2020 especially. But in Canada, it began with the Freedom Convoy. I'll be very honest, that was a flashpoint where the right wing got to mobilize and start building these vast worldwide networks to first oppose vaccines and then trying to find another scapegoat because COVID mandates were mostly lifted. They found trans people. So it very much is not a surprise. They're just following their US neighbors. They need a new scapegoat now that vaccines are no longer viable.
Yeah, well, one of the main people involved in the anti-vaccine, anti-mask movement in Quebec in particular is somebody who's now one of the main people involved in attacking trans communities and organizing anti-drag demonstrations.
Yeah, the neo-Nazi François Mediga, I believe he's organized at least 5 or 6 anti-trans protests up to date, counting all anti-trans ones. Going to be organizing another one in September, which I'm intending on counter-protesting.
Yeah. Now, you know, when we're fighting oppression, when we're fighting these kinds of realities, you know, we have to be focused on the difficult stuff. But I think the word has already been used by you, Fern. There's stuff to be hopeful about. There's positive things. There's a fight back. The trans march is not for people just to be sad. It's for people to be angry and festive. And those two things can, you know, can coexist. So maybe to end up this interview, if each of you can maybe talk about the things that you find hopeful, the things that give us sustenance for the struggle ahead, some of the positive things. I know when I was at some of the drag defenders protests, that was positive because we were winning. And I know, Celeste, I think you were in Quebec City when, I'm not sure if you were there actually, but...
Actually, I was on vacation.
Okay, but in Quebec City, they mobilized hundreds to oppose a potential attack on trans communities and an exhibit that was just expressing tolerance and openness and diversity. So maybe to end up here, because I know we have to end this interview very soon, if you can each speak about you know, the more positive side of things, the things that give you inspiration and hope.
I would say, so I do a fair bit of volunteering in classrooms where we just generally talk about gender and sexual diversity. And one of the moments that stands out most to me is being in a fifth grade classroom, and the class clown, or who I assume was the class clown, sort of ends the towards the end of the class during a question period, goes, well, I don't get it. Like, why are people just being mean? It would be so much easier to just accept everyone and just understand that people are different. And that kind of attitude gives me so much hope. And that kind of attitude coming from someone so young who has a teacher who's really encouraging and who invited us into her classroom, who's encouraging these kind of discussions, that is really amazing to me. The other thing that I love are the collectives that are springing up of people who are just there to take care of each other, there to help each other with their hormone shots, or there to bring each other meals. I will say I had my top surgery about 8 months ago, and I had so many people bring me food, and it was wonderful and felt very, very loving. And being able to pass that on to others, that fills me with joy and with hope.
Yeah, I'd say for me, it's seeing just seeing people fighting back and absolutely decimating the anti-trans movement in Quebec. For example, a recent anti-drag protest in the eastern part of Montreal was decimated 500 to 300, and the Quebec City one, I believe, it was about the same ratio.
No, the Quebec City one had 200 counter protesters who were, you know, on our side, and zero.
Okay, zero.
So the fascists showed up.
Also, one of my favorite things to see is just the strong alliances that have also been built between anti-fascist organizers in general, as well as the queer community, and how this has led to us becoming a force to be reckoned with against the rise of fascism worldwide. We're here, we're queer, and we're here to stay. That's exactly what these people have been managing to do. I'd like to do a special shout out to Pink Lock, which has been organizing all these drag defenders as in the last few months. They've been doing so much work to make sure that trans people would feel welcome, and people who would oppose their existence would not be so, which has worked wonderfully. See our community fighting back, see people with renewed hope, see new generations of activists popping up here and there. It's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah. And I also want to say, when we were writing the demands, it really didn't come just from the two of us. It came from a really big group of people with different perspectives. We had a lot of help from Aztec which is one of the organizations here that's ASTTEQ, and really giving us different perspectives and helping us build this together. That to me is inspiring and hopeful.
Yeah, these are truly the demands for the community and by the community, and not just by a fragment of it.
Well, as I see on the Euphrie en Genre website, it's nothing about us without us is the slogan. So, what you're saying now obviously reinforces that. You provided a lot of beautiful and hopeful words at the end here for us to end the interview on. I want to remind listeners who are listening to this on CKUT that the Trans March is this Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Meet at Place du Canada near Bonaventure Metro, where the John A. McDonald statue used to be. Celeste and Fern are both the main organizers of this year's Trans March. It's part of a whole crew of people. Respect to both of you. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us on No Borders Media.
Thank you so much for having us and for spreading our message.
Yeah, no problem at all. Keep up the good work.
That wraps up the August 2023 edition of No One's Legal Radio. No One's Legal Radio is part of the CKUT Communities Collective's Off the Hour at 90.3 FM in Montreal, www.ckut.ca on the web. We're also directly associated with No Borders Media. We just heard a feature interview with Celeste and Fern, two organizers of the Trans March in Montreal. That march again is taking place this coming Saturday, August 5th. Starting point is 2:30 p.m. at Place du Canada near the Bonaventure Metro. No One's Legal Radio highlights the struggles of communities in resistance with a focus on the self-determination struggles of Indigenous peoples, migrants, refugees, and working-class people of color. No One's Legal Radio is in public confrontation with the Canadian state, organizing to fight against poverty, racism, police brutality, prisons, detentions, and deportations, as well as opposing the displacement and genocide of Indigenous peoples on Turtle Island. Stay tuned for Upstage.
Yes, 1-2-1-2. Oh yeah, see, Nomadic Massive in the place to be. You're listening to CKUT 90.3. Understand.
Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Easy song, easy song, easy song, living.